what a world, what a day, what a life. It's a life sentence for the defendant in the Aurora Theater Massacre case. I think that's darn shame. August 8th, thank you for joining me this Saturday morning. This is a show dedicated to the victims of violence. God bless those whose lives were lost way too young in the Aurora Theater Massacre. What a tragedy that was. And I'm also thinking about World War II on this, the 70th anniversary of the end of that war. You know, we're right between the time where the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, and then in a day or two, 70 years ago, Nagasaki, and then the Japanese surrendered. And thank goodness that terrible war was over. In the 11 o'clock hour, we have Alex Kershaw, a famed historian, great writer. His new book, Avenue of Spies, is fantastic. It's about the French Resistance. He's written other books, including The Envoy about Raoul Wallenberg. And he wrote The Liberator about a Colorado hero named General Felix Sparks. We're going to talk about all of that with Alex Kershaw at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk about this disastrous Iran nuclear deal. That's a situation where we need to avoid war, and I disagree vehemently with the President of the United States. I agree with Chuck Schumer. There's a bad deal. It needs to be defeated by the Congress. That requires Senator Michael Bennett to step up. Will he? Time will tell. Time will tell. Rhonda Fields will join us here in about 20 minutes. She's impacted by the death penalty. She sat through two death penalty trials in Arapahoe County. George Brockner is the DA for Arapahoe County, the 18th Judicial District. He's just worked so hard trying to get capital punishment for the Aurora Theater Massacre defendant, and he came up one short. What kind of a world is it when you lose by winning 11-1? Think of the Rockies game today, and that was a great game yesterday with Cargo hitting a grand slam to beat the Nationals. But think if today you asked after the game, how did the Rockies do? Oh, they lost 11-1. Really? That's not even a close game. No, the Rockies had 11 and the Nationals had 1 and they still lost. When you're a prosecutor, you have to pitch a shutout. Nobody knows that better than our guest in studio, my friend, George Brockler. George, thanks for coming in on this Saturday morning.
Well, thanks for having me on, especially after this case, to talk about it, to answer the public's questions. You know, we've been operating under a gag order for, boy, the duration of this case, and I just think it's a great time to start the conversation.
Well, that verdict yesterday had to kind of make you want to gag. I watched over your shoulder as I did the whole trial. The camera set up, the sound was fantastic. I followed the trial mainly from my desk, but there were other times when I was out of town or riding my bike, listening to streaming coverage of the trial. Really, the public, if they wanted to, could watch every aspect of this case. I don't know, were the cameras at all intrusive to you, or did you just get used to them?
They weren't intrusive at all. I mean, you sort of lose sight of the fact that they're on there, and because we're always in the courtroom and I don't ever watch it on TV, I'd hear about it from other people every once in a while. Something would pop up online with that shot, that up above, over-the-shoulder shot, but posed no issue at all.
George, this has to be disappointing. I went through one capital punishment case, and I know how much it takes out of you to have one person decide the fate of all the work that your team put into it. I know you're saying the politically correct thing. That's the way the system works, but doggone it. How do you feel about that one juror that held up everything?
You know, it's still hard to wrap my mind around it because this wasn't even a close call for me in terms of moving forward. And having said that, this wasn't a knee-jerk reaction either. I spent a long time getting a lot of opinions from those people in this, in the prosecution community who have done capital punishment cases, consulted with the victims. But once I set my mind to it, I mean, this seemed to me to be such an obvious use of the death penalty if any state is going to have it. We have three men on death row who combined killed half as many people as this guy did. And to put that in more perspective, those three men killed only one less than they intended to. Nathan Dunlap wanted to kill the gentleman in the kitchen, and he had the audacity to live. But the guy that we just got done prosecuting wanted to kill 400 people in that theater and was only, and I use air quotes for only, successful in killing 12, the death penalty is completely appropriate for that circumstance and this guy.
And one of the things that disgusted you, and you mentioned it in your closing argument, I'd like to play it for the jury, because your argument was this defendant wanted to live. He covered himself completely with body armor. He wrote on dating websites, "Will you visit me in prison?" Here's how you wrapped up your closing argument.
He predicted a life sentence. Remember?
And object to speculation, a statement of the evidence.
Overrule.
Before he goes out to murder, he changes two of those social websites, the Match.com, "Will you visit me in prison?" And more than predict it, he planned for it. Head to toe, fingers included. There wasn't a millimeter of flesh exposed to any possible pain or injury. He made sure that on July 20th, one person and one person alone would be guaranteed to survive. And that was him for this. He predicted it. He planned for it. He wants it.
Strong arguments from George Brockler. I was a little surprised, George, that you used only a fraction of the 40 minutes allotted for closing. Were you thinking you were going to save it for rebuttal, and then after Tamara Brady spoke, you made a strategic decision not to have a rebuttal closing? Do you second-guess that now?
No, and I'll tell you, in part, it's because this was a rather unique sentencing, as opposed to doing it all in one, which is typically what you see. There's the aggravation. Sometimes it's broken up into finding aggravation and then mitigation, and then that final phase that's unique to Colorado, which is, hey, even if you find aggravation outweighs mitigation, you can still vote for life. Judge Samore split it up into thirds. So this wasn't a complete sentence in closing argument. This was just for this last phase. They had already found four aggravators existed. They had already dismissed the idea that the mental health could outweigh those four aggravators, and they did it quickly. As I approached this closing, my thought was, and I said this, what additional words could you hear from an attorney that would tell you or spin to you or convince you of something you don't already feel in your heart? And then the other thing I thought, too, is the way Judge Samore had set it up was each side was going to get 40 minutes, and regardless of how much time they took, each side could have up to 20 minutes in rebuttal. And no matter what, the judge set it up that the defense would have the last word. Well, I knew that, and I knew if I'd had the last word, I would have probably done a rebuttal. But I also knew that if I was in the public defender's position, I'd save some good cards to play for the end, and I wasn't going to give them the chance to do it unless they made an argument that I felt like I had to rebut. And given the results that we had, I don't think anything I could have said in a rebuttal was going to change this juror's mind. I mean, it sounds like from listening to the statements made by Juror 17 who's come forward, and I sure hope the rest of the jurors feel comfortable coming forward too to share their experiences. It sounds like they were taken aback and surprised by her response too, that this had never come up, not in guilt, not in aggravation, not in weighing, and all of a sudden it was, hey, I'm not going to do it and I'm done.
I watched your closing argument, I watched Tamara Brady's closing argument, and then I watched it again last night in preparing for the show. And it appeared to me that Tamara Brady was aiming some of her argument directly at this specific juror, because they probably did some research on this person. And I even think there was a touch of religion brought into it. You couldn't bring it in, but she did. And I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. This is Tamara Brady from the closing argument.
Each of us has to honestly ask, say to ourselves, "There but for the grace of God go I, or go my child." Why did he get schizophrenia? Why didn't I get schizophrenia? Why don't you have schizophrenia? Is it because he was born with the genetics predetermined for him to get schizophrenia? Was it because he inherited it from the people who came before him in his family?
That's
is it because it strikes like lightning, or it's like getting a cancer? It's just a random occurrence that he got it and I didn't and you didn't?
I thought one thing you had going against you, George, and maybe this factored into that jury's decision, the presence of Bob and Arlene Holmes throughout the trial. A lot of the people we prosecute don't have parents who stand by them, let alone sit in court every day. They seem like a relatively nice couple. And I know you approach them gingerly on cross-examination. What are your thoughts about Bob and Arlene, the parents of this defendant?
Well, I obviously don't think they had anything to do with what happened. And my guess is they've spent a lot of the last 3 years second-guessing decisions they made and didn't make. But there is something that sticks out to me that I just find completely unusual, and that is at no time during the pendency of this case have they ever reached out to me. In fact, I had people call them throughout the pendency of this case, and they continued to hide behind an attorney. And while I get that there are legal reasons for them to maybe not talk, as a parent myself, and I'd ask anybody listening to this, if your son or daughter was facing the potential of a death penalty, what could stop you from calling the DA and saying, please, God, don't kill my son or my daughter? Instead, they went to the Post and did an op-ed piece, coincidentally timed with 3 days after the juror summonses went out. And then Mom published a book of thoughts or whatever they were, calling into question, of course, our motives and saying a bunch of things about mental illness, coincidentally timed with the middle of jury selection, right before opening statements. I mean, again, they're not at fault for what happened here, but I can't, as a parent, envision taking the path that they took.
Bob and Arlene were in the courtroom. I imagine they were following the instructions of the public defenders, their son's attorneys. Now, do I understand correctly that the state of Colorado paid for the parents of the defendant to be here, to live in Colorado during the pendency of the trial?
I don't know the answer to that. It doesn't surprise me. But as you know, and I have tried to champion this last year with legislation that both Rhonda Fields and Paulie Lawrence, by the way, two people who are from opposing parties, to open up the public defender's books on how much money they spend on this, that, or the other. And sure enough, the legislature, the House specifically, defeated that bill. And as you know, the Supreme Court has ruled that the CORA law, the Colorado Open Records Act law, doesn't apply to them. And instead, after this bill was defeated, they issued their own rules on what information they think they'd be willing to disclose. There is no way to have an honest assessment of how the public defender spends its money or the true cost of the death penalty unless those books are opened up. And more than that, the things that I've heard, if we're talking rumor mill stuff, these are public defenders who are handpicked by the public defender, Doug Wilson, to be their chief trial attorneys, right? They live across the state, some in Denver, Weld, wherever, and they paid for them to be housed down here in Arapahoe County. Well, it seems to me the taxpayers ought to be able to weigh in on that decision, too. I'm the district attorney of this jurisdiction. If I hire attorneys to be prosecutors who live in Weld or Colorado Springs and they're on a big trial, should my taxpayers be on the hook for housing them while they go to that trial? There are experts they hired that they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on that the public never heard from, that we're never going to get to know the names of. I just think if we're going to have an honest discussion about the cost of the death penalty, it can't be without an acknowledgement of what the public defender spent. And as you know, too, on our website, every month I updated our costs on there. The public can just go to our website and see how much we've spent.
Part of Tamara Brady's winning argument, when I say it was a winning argument, it means she persuaded one person. It appears George Brockler had 11 people persuaded that death was the appropriate sentence, but Tamara Brady and the public defenders needed to persuade one. And Bob and Arlene were at the heart of the defense closing. And here Tamara Brady even goes a little too far, and George Brockler is forced to object. Listen to this part of her argument.
And that they will always love and support their son for the rest of his life. And they know that he is sick, and they know that he would not have committed this unthinkable, tragic occurrence had he not been sick. But he is, and he is their son, and he is still Chrissy's brother, and his life has meaning to them. There was a time when our country would execute children for crimes they committed.
And that's where
that is no longer done because we...
That's where you objected, George, and your objection was sustained. Her basic argument is we don't execute children and we don't execute people for getting sick. And I hope this doesn't make you sick, but let's let Tamara Brady make that point again.
Before, during, and after July 20th of 2012, he was seriously mentally ill, and this tragedy was born of disease, not of choice. And we do not execute someone for getting sick. The law never requires a death sentence. Not in this case, not in any case, not in the worst case you can imagine. Because the law tells you that this is a moral decision. And only you can decide what is right for you morally.
So there you go. I don't know what that stirs up in you, George Brockler. Probably not good things, but that argument apparently got to one juror. Let's talk about that one juror. Was it a male or a female?
Female juror. It was a 9-3 split in terms of women to men.
So this female juror, was she one of the original jurors or had she come in as an alternate?
One of the originals.
So she was one of the originals. That's got to, it probably would have been rougher on you if it would have been one of the alternates, don't you think?
It might have been. I mean, you know, the parts that you think about are you try to go back in your mind to jury selection back starting in January all the way through March and early April. And again, you know, you're not going to get all A jurors as you might grade them for the prosecution. But there was nothing about this particular juror that stood out to any of us that she was a particular risk one way or the other. And certainly had she given any answers about being intractable on the issue of the death penalty when mental health was on the table, because every juror was asked that, she'd have been excused by the judge or by us. And that didn't happen. So, I mean, I'm going to cling to the idea that there was something about the trial that struck her, some piece of evidence, and that this was a matter of conscience for her. I do think for anyone that listened to that recording by the public defender, they ought to take note, she couldn't even bring herself to call it a crime. It was an occurrence. And this idea that they said, hey, we've never contested the idea that he did this. They've never conceded that he did this. And they sure did object a whole lot to the underlying evidence for something that they didn't contest. She tried to put the jurors in the shoes of the parents. And, you know, at this phase of the sentencing, I imagine they're going to get to do something like that. But the idea that we're just going to use the term serious mental illness, and if you qualify for that, no matter what impact it has on your ability to function, deliberate, make decisions, that all of a sudden that absolves you from this, there will never, ever again be a mass murderer that could face death, because nobody in their right mind could think about murdering 400 people. But that's not the standard. Our standard in the state of Colorado is, how does it affect your ability to make decisions, know right from wrong, and function? This guy was as high-functioning as someone who's on the schizophrenia spectrum of disorders as anyone you'll ever come across. This guy's like John Nash, who got the Nobel Prize. No one says he doesn't deserve the Nobel Prize because whatever he did may have been affected by schizophrenia. But on this case, we say, well, one juror decided that for them, it was too much. I disagree.
It's a shame for those who are advocating for the death penalty. Obviously, even if a death sentence was handed down, it would have been many years before it would have been carried out. The death penalty might have suffered a death blow in Colorado yesterday. You know, John Hickenlooper is in favor of ending capital punishment. There's going to be a move in the legislature to get rid of it. They are going to cite this case. Rhonda Fields is in the state legislature. George Brockler, special guest in-house. You're on 710 KNUS.
Dennis,
see clearly now. Well, now we can see clearly that one juror can't hold up the whole system. It's the bane of a prosecutor's existence, 11-1 verdicts. I went through a couple of those, but I always had a chance to retry the defendant, and eventually justice was served. But in a death penalty context, one person can stop everything. And George Brockler in-house, he's going to stay as long as he can because this guy needs to learn that there are other things happening in the world. George is such a bright person. He's a military veteran. He fought in Iraq. He served our country. Now he served us in this death penalty case, and I'd love to get his opinion on a host of things. George is a relatively young man. I'm of a slightly older generation that starts to look at retirement, and maybe you're in the retirement red zone. Myself, having kids 16 and 12, I'm far from that, but I'll tell you a good idea. Protect your assets. The stock market has been lousy this week. I don't know what it's going to do next week, but a lot of people are saying it could go way south. And I have to ask you, could your portfolio really withstand another downturn like we experienced in 2008? You know, it took the stock market years to recover, and if you're a young person, you've been able to wade through that recovery. But if you're in your retirement, that's a problem. How do you protect your assets in retirement? You go to LegacyWealthDesigners.com. You contact my friend Brian Ditton. You find out about Asset Lock. Asset Lock is a revolutionary state-of-the-art technology that is a stock portfolio system that gives you predetermined exit points. You can find out a lot more about Asset Lock by going to LegacyWealthDesigners.com. Click on the Asset Lock tab. You're going to find out that this is a safe, simple, secure way to protect your assets. That's LegacyWealthDesigners.com. Let me welcome to the VIP line somebody that both George and I know really well. Her name is Rhonda Fields. She was visited by tragedy when her beautiful son, Javad Marshall Fields, and his beautiful fiancée, Vivian Wolf, were gunned down in Idaho and Dayton in Arapahoe County. Two people are on death row as a result of perpetrating that crime, so the death penalty affects her personally. Rhonda Fields, welcome to 710 KNUS.
Good morning, Craig. Good morning, George. How are you guys doing?
Well, I've had better mornings, Rhonda, but it's good to talk to you. That makes it a little bit better.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for all of your hard work over the past 3 years. I want to thank all of the law enforcement people, the prosecutors, the victim advocates, and everyone who worked on your team to seek justice on behalf of the state of Colorado. So thank you so very much.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much.
And Rhonda, this crime affected you in a variety of ways. I'm sure you thought back to the tragedy you suffered, but this happened in your district, District 42, if I recall. Wow.
Yes, it's
amazing how many times capital cases have intersected with your life. What are your feelings toward the victims, many of whom are constituents of yours?
You know, my heart goes out to the victims and their families. I know what it feels like to sit through a trial and through the various phases of what it's like going through a death penalty case. So my stomach has been in a big old knot for about the last 2 weeks, and it's hard to really describe the feeling except for I feel really numb because I know all the hard work that went into this, and the outcome was not what most folks expected based on everyone knowing that he committed this crime not as an insane person. He was it was predicted that he was, you know, he's capable of knowing right from wrong.
We have a lot of people who have mental illness, right? I mean, you can make an argument that everybody's a little mentally ill, but George wanted to talk about evil in his closing argument. There were objections made, but seems to me that a person can suffer from a form of mental illness and also be evil or sociopathic. And I don't know that the one excludes the other. Do you?
Well, you know, I think he understood what was right and wrong. I mean, he was able to get into medical school. He was able to do all the things that he did, knowing what was right and wrong. And I think he should have been held accountable for that.
Rhonda, you know there's going to be a hard charge to end capital punishment. It's going to come from your side of the aisle, the Democrats, and John Hickenlooper is going to be right there to sign the legislation if and when the legislature ends capital punishment. What is Rhonda Fields going to do?
You know, I kind of see that train coming down the track. I've been watching some of the comments on social media, And I think that people are already rallying together to present some type of legislation to repeal. So it's hard to know exactly what I'll do, but I'm just going to wait and see what happens. I don't want to predict anything or say what my strategy would be until I kind of see what kind of legislation is going to be proposed. But I do have a sense that it is coming.
Robert Ray and Sir Mario Owens are two of the three people on death row. The other, of course, Nathan Dunlap. The first two are there because they killed your loved ones. If they repeal the death penalty, what if they try to make it retroactive and apply it to the people who are convicted in the Arapahoe County Courthouse that saw a different result yesterday?
That would just be a real hard blow for me to accept. Because when I think about our criminal justice system and my son being a witness, and we need witnesses to solve crimes, and what Robert Ray and Sir Mario Owens were trying to do is they were trying to get away with murder. And so by killing a witness, you're really trying to undermine our criminal justice system. When I think about all the hard work of the police officers, the detectives, the judges, the jurors, the district attorneys, the defense lawyers, the bailiffs, all the people who participated in this process, and then at the end, the verdict came back the highest penalty that these guys could get, and that was the death penalty. So they were already serving some time, life in jail, for committing murder against my son's best friend. So to think that all of that work, all of those folks who did their best work, and then to have all of that be repealed to life in jail would just be a shame. I think that would just give our state a black eye. I think all the work and that crime deserves the penalty that was rendered, and it was within the statute of our law. So that would be hard.
Right. All three of us have wrestled with capital punishment. It's not an easy issue, but just as with this Aurora Theater massacre, just as the circumstance you describe, once somebody has already warranted a life in prison without parole sentence and they go on to kill somebody further, it seems to me that without further sanction, you're authorizing three murders in the state of Colorado. You can't allow that. If somebody takes a life, there should be some sanction for it. And I think that's what you were talking about right there. And it's interesting that the prosecutor sitting across from me, George Brockler, is also the prosecutor responsible for upholding the verdicts against Ray and Owens. And that's why you and George know each other so well, among other reasons. I just see a lot of pressure coming down the road, and a lot of people are going to be looking at Rhonda Fields. Another of your colleagues, a guy named Javon Melton, a Democrat from Aurora, he's quoted in the Denver Post saying this, Rhonda Fields, today's verdict proves again that the death penalty is arbitrary. Only people on death row in Colorado are black. It has no place in Colorado. What's your reaction to that statement by your colleague, Javon Melton?
Well, you know, the people that are on death row, they are black. But that has nothing to do with the crime they committed. I mean, they committed murder. They committed murder. And the outcome of the jurors said that the highest penalty that they could receive for killing a witness, a double homicide, my son and his fiance, all of his promise, all of his potential was robbed from him because he was trying to get away with murder. And so it had nothing to do with the color of his skin. It had everything to do with the crime, and the crime was murder.
To play the devil's advocate here, there was one juror who held up capital punishment in this case, and is it possible that aside and apart from mental illness, that one juror said, "Boy, I kind of feel for that family. Bob and Arlene Holmes seem like nice people. They've been sitting here every day. They testified on behalf of their son." And they are white people, and I can kind of relate to them better than I can to maybe the parents of Robert Ray or Sir Mario Owens. I don't know if any of their parents were in the courtroom, but is it possible that Javon Melton has a point that this, we thought the defense was mental illness. He seems to assert that the defense was hey, he's a white guy, you can't kill him. Do you think he might have a shred of a point there?
You know, it's something to think about it. I think that when you think about the DA, you know, George Brockler, he pursued the appropriate penalty. Was his death penalty for killing 12 people and injuring 70. So when you think about that case, this was, and my case was also in Arapahoe County. So that death penalty case, it met all the elements, all the aggravators, everything was there for it to be warranted for a death penalty case. The outcome was not what was expected. And so the outcome is what it is. I don't know what to say about the race element. But to do this blanket statement that, you know, it's because he's white, he did not get the death penalty. You know, I have not had a chance to listen to all the comments that the jurors made. If they're bringing in race, then I guess race did play into this.
They didn't, Rhonda. It was one juror, and I... You know, you and I both know Javon. You know him better than I do. But it's just such a outrageous blanket statement on an entire law based on the decision of one juror who, by the way, found this guy sane, found he'd committed this crime with aggravators, found that the aggravators outweighed any mental health issues or any other mitigators, and then hung up on that very last phase. And from that one decision, not only do you have Javon calling the application of the death penalty racist, but you got the Denver Post backing him up and going crazy with their comments as well. And it's an indictment of a system that you can't prove is racist. You just can't. And the proof of that, Rhonda, is had the guys that killed your son and Vivian been white, you and I both know they still would have been pursued for the death penalty. Had Nathan Dunlap Absolutely. Been white and tried to kill five people in Chuck E. Cheese, he still would have been pursued for the death penalty. So the claims are outrageous.
But they're going to come at you, Rhonda Fields. You're going to be the person in the legislature that the most attention is going to focus on. What do you anticipate? And you said you see the train coming, and I know you're going to have to take some time to absorb it. All of us are, George Brockler especially. But what do you anticipate this legislative session, not just factoring in this verdict, but there was a recent Quinnipiac poll that showed that Coloradans still overwhelmingly favor capital punishment by about a 2-to-1 margin. But I don't think that will stand in the way of some of your fellow Democrats.
Yeah, I think that the polling that I've seen states that 61% of the people in the state of Colorado support the death penalty. And so,
right, but I think less than 30% favor abolition of it. The rest are undecided.
Okay. So, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I tell you, it just sickens me that I have to deal with this because it brings up all of my pain and all of the scars and all of my grief to have to, you know, continue to fight this battle, which I think is warranted and it must be debated, and we have to come up with some kind of, you know, resolution if it comes to that. But I just see it coming. I just see it. I think it will start in the Senate. I've seen some senators saying that they want to do this repeal. So I see it starting in the Senate. And if it starts in the Senate, I'm not quite sure if it'll pass out of the Senate or it could start in the House. In the House, you do have your Democrats who are in majority. So it could pass the House and make its way to the Senate. If it gets to the governor's desk, I think that he would sign it.
Well, and Rhonda, you know this too. I don't think whoever's going to push this is foolish enough to make it retroactive, because then it would make them have to defend taking it away from your son's killers. But you and I both know if this thing passes and becomes law, it will have the de facto impact of becoming retroactive. The governor will not leave office without absolving them of those death sentences and converting them to life and using as a justification, look, we've obviously as a state, we've moved on and we've decided death isn't an appropriate outcome and it would be unfair to impose it on these three.
Absolutely. And that's what I see that's happening. That's the train wreck. And that's the part that makes my stomach, you know, really, it just makes me very uncomfortable. It sickens me because I kind of see that coming.
I think you're wise to see it coming. And I'm sorry that these kind of cases have to stir up this emotion in you. I'm sure there are other victims out there that this is just very upsetting. Rhonda, you're an important person in this battle, and we will follow it closely. Thanks for being such a friend of this show, and your final words to George Brockler as he tries to deal with what happened yesterday.
You know, I would just say, just keep up the good fight. You did some amazing work. You know, I had a chance to get plugged in from time to time. You and your team, you should be proud of your work and what you accomplished. I know it's disappointing in the outcome, but I would say just dust yourself off. Live above the noise, because right now there's a lot of noise because of the outcome. But live above that, rise above that, and let's face the next challenge that we have ahead of us.
Well, thank you,
Rhonda. Thank you so much for all of your hard work.
That means a lot, and your support on criminal justice matters has been invaluable, I think, to the state, but certainly the constituents that we share. I mean, you have done a fantastic job of serving them on those issues, and I can't thank you enough.
Wow. Special person, Rhonda Fields, thanks for being on. We'll come back with George Brockler. I want to tell you this. You feel good. Life goes on for George Brockler, for everybody else. Maybe you're looking for a house. Let me tell you, the market is hot. Have you ever thought, why do I have to pay a full commission on my real estate transaction? You really don't. John Vizzi and Colorado Flat Fee Realty is leading a revolution. There's a new way to buy and sell property that changes everything. It puts thousands of dollars back where it belongs with you. It means saving thousands of dollars when you sell, and yet with Colorado Flat Fee Realty, you'll accumulate an even bigger benefit by using them when you buy. Then they will not only help you negotiate the deal, but when you buy a home through Colorado Flat Fee Realty, they'll pay you 1% of the purchase price. That's right, your money back to you. That's a lot of money. This is a revolution, and others are discovering it every day. Why not save many thousands of dollars, put it back in your pocket, by calling John Vizzi and Colorado Flat Fee Realty? The number to call, 303-300-9660. That's 303-300-9660, or ColoradoFlatFeeRealty.com. Let's perk things up around here.
The Craig Silverman Show welcomes you to Craig's Lawyers Lounge.
And in the lounge today,